we were in the right place at the right time, and we got our sales strategy right, got our marketing strategy right.
All the while, you must tell your story, and you must be focused on serving them.
It's not real necessarily outcome. It's the knowledge that you gain, you know, while you're facing these issues.
We get so caught up in trying to do everything at once, where success is simultaneously not sequential.
Welcome to the Ajax Union B2B Marketing Podcast. On this podcast, we interview CEOs of the fastest growing companies in the U.S. Our goal is to find out what they did to grow so fast, what business and marketing strategies they used to have explosive growth. And now your host, Joe Applebaum, CEO and founder of Ajax Union, a B2B digital marketing agency in Brooklyn, New York.
Reg Harnish is the CEO of Gray Castle Security, a leading service provider dedicated exclusively to cybersecurity and the practical management of cybersecurity risks. When speaking to Reg, I learned that he's really a cybersecurity expert. He also understands a thing or two about marketing, because Gray Castle Security invests 10% of their net sales in marketing each year, which actually is a huge investment. But Reg has something interesting to say. I like what Reg said about analytics and how it's a very nerdy aspect of marketing, but it actually powers the creative side. It helps you be more creative. Let's begin the interview and hear what Reg has to say about their stringent pre-qualification process, because we all know not every client is created equal.
Awesome. Awesome. So I don't know if you got a chance to look at the questions and all that?
Yep.
Okay. Very awesome. Good. So what we're going to be doing is we're interviewing a bunch of the Inc. 5000 companies that have graduated in 2017, asking about your business growth, about your marketing, and about yourself. And so welcome to the Ajax Union B2B Marketing Podcast. How are you doing today, Reg?
I'm excellent. Thank you.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about your business. What do you do and why do people do business with you?
Sure. So Gray Castle Security really is the leading cybersecurity risk assessment, advisory, and mitigation firm in the country. That sounds weird in an industry that's growing as quickly as ours, but the reality is that the problem is young, the industry is young, and because of that, it's a bit of the wild, wild west. What we figured out a long time ago is that the cybersecurity issue, right, risks, problems, the work you got to do is going to grow way faster than one, businesses were able to keep up with, but then two, that talent was able to solve in terms of the demand on individuals and skills and expertise. So we built a system for delivering cybersecurity, the entire function, so not just working on firewalls or responding to a breach, but the entire program that can be virtualized. What I mean by that is every business today needs an encryption expert, but they probably only need them a couple hours a month. They need a risk assessor, maybe a couple of days a month. They need a pen tester, an awareness trainer. They need all of these different talents in cybersecurity, but they don't need them full time necessarily. So we've built a function where we can basically insert these folks into a program only as much as the client needs, and then they only have to pay for that time. What ends up happening is really for the price of a chief information security officer, an organization today can get an entire cybersecurity team and program.
Wow.
Now, the reality is that because of the shortage of talent, any business who decides that they're going to hire and maintain their own cybersecurity team is really struggling today because the talent just doesn't exist. So we satisfy and solve both the functional problem of dealing with cybersecurity as well as the logistical and financial issues as well.
That's pretty incredible. And you guys grew really quickly over the past 3 years. You were founded in 2011 and you were number 721 on the Inc. 5000. You had a 3-year growth of 636%. Your revenue last year was $3.2 million in revenue. So what do you attribute your business growth over the past 4 years? Like, what did you do differently that made your business grow?
Well, you know, I think to some degree, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships. The cybersecurity industry right now, excuse me, is a bit of a gold rush. And there's a lot of activity there, certainly significant growth. You know, a market that has gone from zero to $1 trillion in, you know, really 10 years. So I think that certainly is part of it. I certainly attribute some of our growth to a client retention, where once you've been a client of Gray Castle Security, generally speaking, you don't go away because we do great work. We're good communicators. We solve their problems for them. And we've got a brand, you know, that we've built over the last 6 years. We're nationally recognized. We've been in some very big stories, nationally speaking. And I think the solution is one that kind of speaks for itself. It's unique enough. So I think all of those attribute to growth, but I don't want to understate the importance of our people. It's very difficult to find cybersecurity experts who can also communicate well, you know, have a good handshake and make eye contact. And so I think there's a lot of our success is due to the fact that we have committed to finding the best people and building a culture here so that they can't leave.
It's pretty incredible that you find tech people that also have people skills. It's hard to find those. So do you actually look for those qualities in team members? Are those one of the most important things you look for in tech people to make sure that they're also people?
Yeah, we do. In fact, I just had this conversation this morning with our services team in the sense that, you know, we're very particular when we're recruiting. And for us, we're shifting a little bit in the sense that, of course, we always look for cybersecurity expertise and experience. But for us, really, the most important skills or characteristics of a candidate are, you know, someone who is passionate about what we're doing, who is, you know, organized and detail oriented, who can communicate well. These are the kinds of folks who become very successful in cybersecurity, not necessarily the one that's been working on firewalls for 10 years. Experience is really important in our business, but for our team, every one of them need to be great communicators and be very organized and understand what it means to work on a team.
That's powerful. Now, who do you serve? Who's your most ideal client in terms of, you know, getting customers?
60% of our business comes from healthcare and higher ed. The next 30% comes from financial services, technology, critical infrastructure, and then there's a smattering of every other industry out there. We are solidly sort of small to mid enterprise. So 1,000 employees and up, 100 million in revenue and up, tend to be our sweet spot. That said, we've got a couple of dozen Fortune 500 firms, as well as a 20-person nonprofit. You know, so what's happened is that the demand for cybersecurity has gone up, but only as organizations recognize that it's worth it to them. And so that could happen really in any industry, in any size business.
Awesome. And in terms of growing your business, did you use a sales team to grow your business? Do you have people outbound calling and all that stuff, or is it more organic?
It's both. So one of our first two employees was a salesperson who has done nothing but focus on sales the entire 6 years that he's been here. That said, certainly we have, our model is one where you buy Gray Castle once and you have us forever. And it's a recurring contract and engagement. So we have a team of folks who are focused on client retention and managing that relationship over time. So it's really both. Certainly our sales team is focused on bringing in new business. And then once they're here, we have teams who are focused on retaining them.
So what's more important to your business right now? Now that you had this growth and you grew very quickly over the past couple of years, is it more important for you to continue to grow your revenue, or is it more important for you to focus on your EBITDA, your bottom line?
It's for us as a growth business, there's no EBITDA in our business. So every dollar goes back in. For us, generally speaking, we try to break even. And we've been profitable since year one, but I know if we end up with $1 million in the bank at the end of the year, we didn't manage our finances very well, because this is really about growth for us, because there's no 800-pound gorilla in cybersecurity today. We have the opportunity to be that organization, but we really have to keep the gas pedal just mashed right now. This is a land grab, and so we're moving as quickly as possible.
So what marketing strategies did you use to grow your business over the past couple of years?
So our second employee was a marketing coordinator, and we have invested about 10% of our net each year in marketing. So we take it very seriously. We make huge investments in marketing. And for us, it was a, I hate to use buzzwords, but a multi-pronged strategy in the sense that we knew we needed a social media presence. We knew we needed individual brands for myself and some other folks here who are experts out at, speaking at conferences and writing white papers and blogging. And all of that was important from a marketing activity perspective. However, we also are very mid-brained from when it comes to marketing. We have folks who are very creative, understand event planning, and understand, PR and how to deliver the right message. But behind that is a data analytics team who really, really understands the numbers behind marketing, everything from search engine optimization to pay-per-click advertising to what how many impressions our competitors had and how can we beat them, be above the fold on Google for all of them, all the way through tracking click streams and presence and visits to our website and correlating all that information. So we pretty much know when we touch someone, what they're doing with us, what activities they were engaged in, really to a very large degree. It's a very nerdy aspect to marketing, but it powers the creative side.
That's pretty powerful. So you mentioned SEO, PPC, social media. Do you use any marketing automation software or any tools that help you be able to leverage marketing automation?
We do. We use both sort of third-party applications as well as some intellectual property that we've built here in terms of marketing planning and orchestration. So it's a combination of both.
Okay, awesome. And what did you, so you mentioned you invested 10% of your net. Was that 10% of your net profit or of your revenue in marketing?
Net sales.
Oh, your net total revenue. Wow, that's a big investment for a business that's
very
growing like that.
Huge investment. Yeah, I mean, for a company our age and size, I don't know of anyone else who's investing what we do in marketing.
Especially as a service business. So how do you measure return on investment?
Well, specifically for marketing or in general?
Yeah, for marketing.
Difficult to do, as you know. However, what we've built is a system where from the moment an activity is budgeted for and confirmed, basically it's approved to be part of the plan, we assign unique codes to those. We track them through development as well as the actual execution or launch of that activity, whether it's an email campaign or it's a booth at a conference. And then our business development team is trained to tag each opportunity that comes from a specific activity with those codes. And then ultimately, once an opportunity or a deal closes, we can track that entire lifespan all the way back to the first time we engaged with that business or individual. And on top of that, marketing is also generating their own marketing specific codes. So let's say it's not an outbound type marketing activity. Someone's coming to us. Those are all automatically assigned tracking codes as well. So today, we can tell you 50% of the deals that will close this year, exactly the lifespan and path that opportunity went through or individual went through to get to us. And then once they engage with us, how that opportunity basically unfolded.
It's cool.
So that we can
guys
start to focus on the marketing activities that generate the most revenue or return.
That's cool. I see that you guys have separate WordPress blogs for different people in your organization. Like you and Gary have your own blogs and you post links to those blogs on the Grey Castle website that are external links. That's pretty interesting.
Correct.
What's behind that strategy?
So I wouldn't call it a strategy, although there are some security benefits to doing it that way. For us, early on, WordPress was the blogging site. So 6 years ago, we haven't really changed it a whole lot. And then so we figured out how to aggregate and how to obviously to syndicate or publish all that on our website. But today, what most people don't realize is that every website has vulnerabilities. And so if you can compromise, if all your blogs were in one place, and then that blogging site was syndicated or linked to your website, there are certainly ways to exploit those vulnerabilities such that with a WordPress problem, they could get to our website and compromise our website.
Yeah.
But having all these different pieces moving around, it means you've got to compromise a number of different assets before we become vulnerable. So there are, we, you know, we decided a while ago that the security benefits of having all of these independently syndicated blogs was worth the additional administration that it takes to manage them.
I noticed that. You're like, if you're going to hack me, go hack WordPress.com. Don't hack my server, because I just have a plain HTML server, or at least I'm making it look that way.
Correct. Yeah, you got it.
That's pretty cool. So what mistakes did you learn from marketing that maybe you tried something? You're making big investments, so obviously you're making some mistakes. What marketing did you try and maybe that marketing didn't work? What are some things that didn't work?
Well, it was really a concept for us, or a philosophy. So it wasn't marketing itself. It was the messaging part of marketing that we were, I would say we're on version 2 of, or maybe 2.5. But early on, we were really smart. Like, we understood cybersecurity risk, we understood threats, and we understood different controls and all these different aspects of cybersecurity. And so as we would go and talk to prospects, we would explain to them, listen, here's how you build an effective cybersecurity program. It's very basic. There's not a lot of rocket science in cybersecurity. It's just hard work. So we'd go through the pitch for 30 minutes, going through PowerPoint slides, and the prospect would be nodding, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. We'd get to the end of the conversation, they'd be like, I love this. This is exactly what we need. And so we said, oh, well, that's great. When do you want to get started? And then, of course, all of the barriers, so the hurdles started coming up. Well, it's not budgeted. It's not a priority. I don't have the authority. All of these different things. So what our approach was day one was to come back at them from a different perspective. Oh, so when you got this hurdle, let us figure out how to clear that. Then we'll get on to the next hurdle. We'll have to figure out how to clear that. And regardless of what it was, we just kept spinning our wheels, and we're scratching our head saying, well, they said they loved what we did, and we're exactly, how are they not engaging with us? What we hadn't figured out was that cybersecurity, like other products, some other products, is an emotional buy, and no amount of data is going to change someone's mind. And so for us, about 2 years into the business, the light bulb sort of went off. It's like, we've never changed anyone's mind, no matter how smart we are, no matter how many different angles we approach the conversation from. If they weren't ready to buy from us today, we've never been able to convince them to do that. So we turned our entire sales and business development and marketing functions on its side. We rotated them 90 degrees, and we said, listen, we don't care if you buy from us today, but what we do care about is knowing if you're not going to buy in the first 15 minutes, so that we could, you know, part as friends, be great to meet you, but then so we can get on to someone else who actually is ready to buy. Because the reality is that right now, as you and I are on the phone, someone out there, some business out there is buying a risk assessment that has never heard of us. And that's because for us, sales success is about activity, not about messaging. So we've completely rebuilt our marketing and business development functions to support activity.
So you're saying that you qualify people in the first 15 minutes to know if they're going to buy, and you trial close them. And if they're qualified, then you'll do all the activities and make proposals and chase them and all that stuff. But if they're not pre-qualified on the first 15 minutes, then why should you waste your time with them?
Correct. And that pre-qualification is very stringent. And honestly, one of the most important characteristics, one of the boxes that they have to check to pursue this is this prospect ready to buy today from us? And if he can't answer yes to all of those things, we move on.
So what are some questions that you ask the prospect to see if they're ready to buy today? Like, you just said, you want to buy before they, that's a little spoiler.
There's many indicators that would suggest a good prospect. Are they in a regulated industry like healthcare or critical infrastructure or finance? Are we working with the decision maker? So not necessarily the CIO, but whoever's going to actually decide on the cybersecurity program. More often these days, it's the CFO, it's the CEO, it's a compliance officer. And so we want to make sure that we're talking to the right person. Have they budgeted for it? So is this an anticipated spend for them? Are they in geographies where we're strong, right? So we have clients in every state, but really 50% of our business is between Philadelphia and Boston. So, and there's a couple of other questions as well. We'll go through this whole checklist. And the last question is, okay, if you've checked everything else, is this prospect ready to buy today from us? And if they can do that, then we put all our resources against that.
That's really incredible. Yeah, I once heard they're called the four gateways. Identify the need, identify the decision maker. And if you have the wrong decision maker, go back to re-identify the need with the right decision maker, identify the budget, and then the time frame. And it looks like you're doing a really good job of doing that. So that is really great advice. So what advice would you give a person that's trying to get into this massive trillion-dollar market of security, of cybersecurity today, from a marketing perspective? What would you tell them?
Well, I think there's good news and there's bad news. I think the good news is that it's growing so quickly, and the demand is the demand potential, let me put it that way, is so great that anyone who gets into cybersecurity and finds a home and does a good job, I think they can be successful. I think the bad news is that there's a gold rush. And so every law firm, every CPA, you know, accounting firm, every insurance carrier, every landscaper wants to put cybersecurity on their website and claim that they do this. And so today there's so much noise that it's really difficult for, you know, a hospital, a bank, a college to distinguish between a real pen test and a $2,500 scan that they can get, just some offer that came in over the fax machine. Honestly,
I'm a McAfee or something, right?
Yeah. So it's because the problem is not well understood by executives or by corporate America in general. And there's so much out there right now. Plus, we're distracted by headlines, you know, breaches and these kinds of things. And the emotions in cybersecurity also, you know, play everywhere. So I think, you know, for anyone who decides that they want to make a career or a business out of cybersecurity, there's plenty of room to do that. But you got to be able to differentiate, and that requires a lot of education and time. So I think you need to be capitalized. I think the next wave of cybersecurity success is not going to be in technology, right? We've seen for a decade now companies like FireEye and Palo Alto who have made a killing selling the blue pill. The blue pill doesn't work by itself. There's no blue pill in cybersecurity. And I think the next wave of hysteria in cyber is going to be around risk assessments and potentially awareness. And so services businesses that can address those acute concerns, I think, are in a good place as well. But again, you know, every day there are more competitors out there.
Yeah.
I think really for us, the strategy is land grab. Like, let's get as many clients as possible. Let's not lose them. And let's just continue to, you know, if we can establish critical mass and a brand that we're proud of and that our clients are proud of, we're in a good position to continue to grow. And that's kind of, you know, what's behind our plan.
How are you leveraging the Equifax hack that happened now? Are you kind of doing that, or is that too B2C-ish?
It's kind of on the fringe. So we end up on TV all over the country when these kinds of things, we have a lot of stations that call us, or, you know, newspapers, e-newsletters, whatever, that call us for a comment on these kinds of things. So we generally get a little bit of a press bump when these big stories hit. Usually the phone rings a little bit with prospects who are concerned about the same problems that they think Equifax had. But a lot of what we do is sort of professional contrarian, because the real stories are lost here. Like, everyone's focused on the Equifax breach and what it's going to do to their credit, or has their identity been stolen, these kinds of things. But the reality is that the incremental risk of the Equifax breach is actually quite small, because everyone's identity has already been stolen many times over. And so to be worried now about this particular breach, even though it sounds massive, and it is, and it's important, but we tend to, you know, individuals and businesses tend to get distracted by the hype and hysteria around cybersecurity. When really it's just the advice is just, if you're building an effective cybersecurity program, just continue to do that. Don't do anything different. And if you haven't started, now's the time. But, you know, invariably Equifax will be forgotten about in 2 weeks because the next breach will hit. And we continue to bounce from headline to headline, and it generally distracts the average CEO, CFO, CTO, CISO from their real problems. Every business has their own risk. And even if you're a bank, the bank across the street has different risks than you do. Maybe not different threats, but different risks. And so you know, I think we're so early in the evolution here. Ultimately and eventually, cybersecurity will be like payroll and legal advice. You'll just do it. You'll know when you need to do it, and you'll know how much, and it'll just be a cost of doing business. Today, it's very different, and it's confusing. It's new. It's not all that exciting. It's, you know, it's never done. There's just a lot of things that keep, you know, businesses from investing.
Wow. So you talked about people getting all in a frenzy and all about that, and that's just one thing in their business that stresses them out. But what do you do as a leader of a fast-growing business just to manage your stress, especially in security?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if you're asking about sort of things outside of work that I enjoy doing, but managing stress here internally at work, I guess if I had a strength, that would be one of them, is that I'm generally cool under pressure and very even keeled. And so, you know, big spikes or valleys tend to not excite me all that much. And staying the course is, I guess, a really sort of a strength. But managing that stress obviously comes in helping managing the stress of my people. If my team is motivated and excited and they're working and they're, you know, they believe in the vision and they're passionate about all this stuff, then my stress level is generally pretty low. And so part of it is managing their stress, which implicitly manages mine. So, you know, trying to make myself available to them. This is my fourth company, and so I've been through this, done, you know, rodeo a couple of times. Whereas my team is a little bit younger and doesn't have the same experiences that I do. That said, outside work, you know, I've got a ton of hobbies. I've got a 17-month-old daughter who is just, you know, a ray of sunshine no matter what's going on. It's just the best part of my day. I'm a firearms instructor. Shooting guns tends to be de-stressing for sure. I run, I play racquetball, tennis. I play a lot of sports, and just trying to be around friends and family and enjoy the nice weather. It's pretty much my schedule outside of work.
That's beautiful. So now that you did what you did and you learned what you learned, what would you tell someone on this journey, the journey of entrepreneurship, the journey of growing your business fast, to watch out for personally while they're building their business?
Well, I guess I'll start with something that a mentor of mine told me once, and he said, success in business is all luck, but the harder you work, the luckier you get. For me, a lot of this comes down to just working my absolute ass off day after day and believing in the mission. And, you know, I guess I think entrepreneurs tend to be born, not made. And I think you've got to be a little bit stubborn and a little bit close-minded to be successful, because you can't listen to people who think it won't be successful, or, you know, look at negative trends and relay those to you. It's like, you got to be bullheaded about some of this stuff. If you believe in it, just do the hard work, keep your head down, and don't, you know, ignore the other stuff. It sounds short-sighted, but I think it's necessary. I think also, though, is not undervaluing what it is that you are bringing. If I think you can go back to, you know, VCR versus other technology, Apple versus Microsoft, all of these, you know, sort of had a competitive piece to it, that it would have been very easy to pick the victor and you would have always been wrong. And so I think it's important to value, or to not undervalue, what it is that you're building or what it is that you're doing. Don't be afraid to charge twice as much as your competitors if the value is there, if you can demonstrate the value. I think that's a lesson that we're still learning. Certainly, I'm still learning. And there's not really a science to it. You know, there's a little bit of perception and intuition that goes into that math. But I think it's really important.
That's powerful. In the book, Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill writes about persistence and determination and making sure that you're going to do it no matter what, and not let the naysayer stop you, because everyone and their mother is going to tell you that you shouldn't do what you're doing. So that's powerful, powerful stuff. How do you plan on leveraging this prestigious award of being on the Inc. 5000?
Well, certainly, I mean, we're going to blast this out every place that we can. I think it does add credibility. I tell people here, I mean, we've won a ton of awards, this was the first one where legitimately it's really difficult to game the system. And so this, especially in being the top 15%, honestly, we were like high-fiving and screaming and jumping up and down and crying over here with excitement, because it's a legitimate award. It's a legitimate recognition versus things like, you know, Great Places to Work and all those awards can generally be gamed some way. This really feels good. And honestly, to place so high really is a little bit eye-opening for us, in the sense that you're working so hard and you're in the business every day and you don't have a chance to lift your head up and see what's going on around you. But to be recognized by, you know, an established, credible, prestigious organization like Inc., I mean, it was really huge here internally, and we'll continue to, you know, leverage that and milk that award here internally and obviously externally as much as we can.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. One final question. What learning or advice from others was most valuable to you? Any books, business gurus, parents, mentors? Was there anybody or anything that you would want to share with other people listening to this, other entrepreneurs that are listening to this during your growth, something that helped you tremendously?
Tough to identify just one, but you know, if I had to pick one, I would say my grandfather, who got me into computers when I was very young, 13 years old, when the very, very first personal computers were available. He, you know, I just wanted to be like him. And so he was into computers. And so I was into computers, and I just, whatever he did, I did. I got his computer hand-me-downs. And so by the time I got to college, I was already making more money than my parents, and I was, you know, working professionally in the field. And, you know, he changed my life. Honestly, I was talking to someone at lunch today who knows someone who has a daughter who's going into college. And I say, yes, what do you think she's interested in? What does she want to be when she grows up? She has no idea. I literally knew when I was 13 years old what I wanted to be. And there was never a question or a thought of, well, do I want to be a fireman or an astronaut or a... It's just that I never had those thoughts as a kid. I always knew exactly what I wanted to do, and now I'm doing it.
Wow, that's powerful.
I'm lucky. I'm very, very lucky.
That is awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on this. Congratulations on this incredible award, and I look forward to speaking to you again very, very soon.
If you enjoy the podcast, please remember to share it with a friend or two or three, and remember to leave a 5-star review so other people can enjoy the podcast as well. You can reach me, Joe, at amazing@ajaxunion.com, where you can send what questions you want me to ask the next batch of CEOs that I'll be interviewing. I look forward to hearing your feedback, and remember, stay amazing.